Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Ginger Running YouTube channel live broadcast or subsequent podcast. Today, we are talking about the things you can learn from a DNF that will make you a better ultra runner with everybody's favourite coach and physio. It's Tim Piggott from HP3 Coaching. How are you doing today, Tim?
Yeah, all good. Good to see you again. You keeping well?
Yes. Yep. Doing well. Yep. We're both having a little bit of an off month. What did you call it? Not a training month.
Just off season.
Off season, that's it.
It's important after, you know, if you've had a busy season. I seem to have had quite an extended season building up to this, so I'm having an extended off season, good bit of time off. Just any running is mostly just taking the dogs for a jog around the fields or down the canal, and that's about it, really. Just letting mind and body recharge before knuckling down. I've started to map out next season. Put a few entries in, got a few things lined up. But I've got plenty of time yet. Nice bit of chill out time.
Chilling out, yes.
Train when you want to, and if you don't want to, you don't have to. It's not a problem.
Yeah,
it's a really important phase. And, you know, for some people, it might only be 10, 14 days of just not running, just taking it super easy. But some people might need longer, you know, 3 or 4 weeks. And yes, you know, a longer break, there will be a slight drop in your fitness, but that will come back pretty quick. So don't fear that. And if that's what you need, it's all good.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think the whole of October for me is good. And I thought maybe today we could talk. I've put in the title 5 things to learn from a DNF, because basically based on the fact that you had 5 questions on this really great Instagram post that you put up recently. I'm going to read it out because I think it really sort of spoke to me, this Instagram post. If you don't follow Tim on Instagram, do look him up. I'll just read out the actual address. It's Tim Piggott HP3 on Instagram. So definitely give him a follow. So Tim wrote, "It's the dreaming season where athletes are working through their goal setting exercises. But before we start thinking about which events to target next year, we need a moment to reflect on the past. And for this is where the wisdom lies. By analysing your training and racing experiences over the past seasons, you gain a deeper understanding of what works and what doesn't. So this reflection bridges the gap between training theory and practice, showing how training principles apply to your unique journey and thus how to optimise your future training and performances." So I just thought that really spoke to me. Have you written stuff like that before on Instagram? Is that sort of standard coaching practice to think about these things at this time of year?
It should be standard coaching practice. It's stuff that I've written in the past. I did review the language and some of the wording this season for people. I had a much bigger sort of explanatory part for my coached athletes in terms of leading them into their reflection activities, and I certainly expanded some of the questions that I was asking my athletes in that active part of the goal setting exercise. Really kind of using a lot of kind of motivational interviewing type questions to really get people to think about some of the underpinning thoughts and feelings and emotions that lead into then what we then think about in terms of planning for the future. And in fact, I've had a sports science student, undergraduate student, working with us as well, and he's also written a blog post, which is on the website. And again, it nicely summarizes, as we're then moving into the next phase of thinking about outcome goals, process goals, performance goals, and these different types of goals and how they all then lead on to the next thing. But what you're referring to here is that sort of initial post I put up a few weeks back now, which is before you start thinking about setting your goals for next year, as I just mentioned at the start of this call, you know, I'm starting to, you know, map out my races for next year. But before you start thinking about that, you need to really reflect back on the past season or seasons and really kind of think about, well, you know, what has gone well? What have you enjoyed? What's been fun? Yeah. What has worked? And then also maybe what hasn't worked and why? And it's that underpinning why that then leads on to, well, what am I going to do differently next time around? Am I just going to do the same races all over again? Am I going to do different races? Am I going to do the same training, or am I going to need to change my training in some way? You know, did training and goals and everything, you know, did you achieve your goals? Did they match your expectations, or did life get in the way? And is life going to get in the way again next time round? Do you therefore need to review your goals? You know, I've had athletes who have set lofty goals in terms of doing, you know, big races, but quite frankly, because of work and family commitments, the time isn't there to put that level of volume in. You know, if you want to go and run a 100 miler, you're not going to get away with running 10, 15 miles a week. You want to go and do an Ironman race, you're going to struggle doing an Ironman on 3 or 4 hours of training a week. So it's being, you know, being honest with yourself as to those expectations. So yeah, so you need to kind of reflect back on, you know, how did you perform last year, and did that actually meet last year's goals and those expectations, or did you do better? And therefore, can you actually push your goals a little bit more, challenge yourself a little bit more? You know, were you not backing yourself enough back in 2022 when you were setting your goals for this year? So those are a lot of the kind of reflection points that I was talking about in there. And then it's also about that sort of deeper, you know, what did you learn about yourself last year? And what did sport teach you about who you are and where you're going? That's the sort of summary of that reflective bit before we then move into then setting your actual goals for next year.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you've got a few questions that I thought it would be good if we sort of work through them together, then that'll give other people a little framework to work through it from themselves. But there's a live question, just first of all, that really ties into what you've just been saying, from Martin Weston. I'm thinking I start with the events and then I fit the training around them. Is that a good way? My first draft seemed to have all the events happening in May, so that's not going to work. But yeah, I think I do that too. I choose the events that I want to do just because they look cool or somebody wants to pay me to do them, and then I put my training around them. Yeah, I think a lot of people might do that. So this is a bit of a different approach, isn't it? Looking backwards before you look forwards.
Well, it's certainly looking backwards before you look forwards. So you learn from the past. Because it might be, yes, you've got an event you want to do. Let's take yourself as an example. So a year ago, we were talking about you doing the Lakeland 100. So you set that target. I want to run 100 miles in the lakes, in the mountains, fine. So what's the training plan required to meet that? And then we realized, well, actually, you know, you were finding it a challenge to do some of the 30 milers and trying to fit the training into, you know, having a busy job, having a young family, husband, all the rest of it that you're juggling, and actually trying to get out there to do those longer runs was hard. And then for various reasons, then shifted that idea, saying, right, well, actually, that original goal of the 100 miler, that's not going to be an achievable goal. Let's make it achievable. Let's go for the Lakeland 50. Right, okay. So now we've got a more achievable goal, and then we can match the training plan for that. And you did that really successfully.
Yeah, more successfully than I thought. I was very surprised.
Exactly, because it was then adjusting the goal to actually meeting your training availability. So the obvious thing to do is say, right, these are the events I want to do. That's the demands of the event. That's what's going to be required to meet my goal of running 50K, 100K, 100 miles, whatever it is we're talking about. And then you kind of work backwards from there. And, you know, where am I at now? You know, what's my current level of fitness? How many miles a week am I doing? What are my strengths? What are my limitations? What do I need to work on? And how do I kind of square that circle of getting from where I am now to where I need to be in that race? Yeah. So that's a very logical way of doing it. And that's what most people will do. Mm-hmm. There is another way of thinking about it, which is just assessing where you're at now. And this is more of a much longer term view. Where are you at now? How can you just improve on where you are now and just keep making steady progress on your current level? And then assessing, right, where am I at now? And what event would fit my current level of fitness? And then slotting in a race. So going, right, you know, I am currently running, I don't know, let's say 50 miles a week. I'm quite comfortable with that. My long run is comfortably 20, 25 miles a week. I'm going to go and do a 50K race because we know that's going to be a very, very achievable event.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're running, you know, 40, 50 miles a week, and then you're saying, right, now I'm going to go and do a 100 miler. It's not that that's not achievable, because it is, but it's certainly going to hurt a lot more. Mm. And it's going to take you a lot longer to recover.
Yeah.
So the other way of thinking about it is just gradually building your fitness, slowly that improvement. And then you assess yourself and say, right, I'm at this level now. What would be a suitable race for me to slot in the next month's time? Now, of course, the problem with that is most of these races are selling out 12 months in advance now, aren't they? The big ones, anyway. Mm-hmm. A lot of the fail races and, you know, things like that, you know, there are many who are still, you know, you can pay on the line, turn up on the day, things like that. But a lot of the bigger ones, you know, they're selling out.
Yeah.
So you do need to be planning 12 months in advance. You know, if you're looking at some of the, you know, if you're going down UTMB, for example, you know, you might be thinking about a multi-year plan as you're building towards a particular key. So, we go back to, was it Martin?
Yes.
Martin's point there, or question there. I mean, that is the logical thing to do. You think, right, what are the races I want to do? But then ask yourself, is that jump between where I am now and where I need to be, is that an achievable jump? Mm. Is it going to challenge me, and is it going to motivate me? Is it too easy? Or is it too hard?
Yeah.
And that's what you then need to reflect on. Yeah. And then just think about, so you said, Martin, that you've got a lot of races on your wish list, which are kind of all in May. So you've got to think about how realistic is it to recover from one race to another? How hard are you going to be pushing yourself? How hard is that race for you? You know, I could go and run a marathon and I could go training the next day, because a marathon isn't a huge distance for me, because I'm 2,500K, 100-mile type distance. Whereas somebody else, a marathon would take them 2 weeks, 3 weeks to recover from. So it's all a very individual thing. You've got to think about sort of how close you're putting these events together, and also then thinking about the importance of individual races. So we can classify things as kind of A races, B races, and C races. So A races, these are your key events. You might only have two of these in a season, in a year, maybe three at a push. These are the ones you're really looking to peak for. And then you're going to taper down and be nice and fresh on that start line. And those are the ones you're going to really push hard, and you're going to need some good recovery time afterwards. Your B races are your kind of test events, where you're really going to fine tune your race nutrition. You're going to go hard, but you might not put as much of a taper and recovery in afterwards. And your C races are, they're just a hard training day. So it might be you turn up to the race, but that is just your long run for the week. It's just a long run where there's some aid stations along the way. Something like that. So then you've got to think about, you know, how important is each race. So if you've got a list, Martin, of, you know, four or five races, which ones do you really care about and why? They might be the A races. And then the other ones, which may be just more, let's say, kind of club events, you know, running club events or social events, ones you've done maybe many times in the past, they might be more your B and your C races, that type of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you do want to then spread those out. So those A races, you know, there might be one early season, so May, for example, and then there might be another build for a late season race, so August, September, for example.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And we do have another live comment that I do want to read out to you now, Tim, because it's a very nice one. It's from Rain Man Smith. And they say, always so good when you have Tim on. Please thank him for his common sense approach to training and clarity in his explanations, which are a great help.
Thank you very much.
There you go. There's Tim's blushing there. So yeah, I thought we might just take your questions one by one from that Instagram post and just do a little bit of a live sort of like athlete analysis.
Sure.
With me as the guinea pig, because I do have quite a lofty goal for next year in wanting to do a 100 miler. So yeah, but I also have quite a few reservations. So okay. I need you to be my agony aunt, Tim.
And, so go on then, have a lie down on the therapist couch.
Just have a little lie down. Yeah.
Well, the first question I would ask is, if you look back over your past season, what are your biggest accomplishments or achievements as an athlete?
So the best one for me was the Ultra Trail Snowdonia 50K, because it was really steep, really hilly, really hot. And it was the first ultra that I'd done after having Finley, and also I just DNF'd the month before. I DNF'd the Manx Mountain Marathon, and that came as like a big shock because I've never been last in a race before, and I had no idea that even had cutoff times, because I'd just been in the mid pack before, and I'd had the flu before, and also, you know, first ultra coming back from after having Finley, I just wasn't in the right place yet. So UTS, when I came over that finish line, I was just so proud of myself for having done it. And then it was really good because you came over the finish line having done the 100K. And that was just really nice as well, because it was just like, oh, it's Tim, yeah. So that was really nice as well to see you there.
You're a sweaty mess just kind of
landing. Hot mess, yeah. Yeah, no, that was really fun. And also I just really liked the UTS because it was so beautiful. Like that day was so, I'm not a big fan of the heat. And I did want to jump in one of those pools up the side of the Watkin Path. But it was just such a beautiful area. And I was really proud of myself because I was sort of managing myself, and you told me all about how to be prepared for the cutoff times, and I'd done my gradient profile and I'd really planned it, and I felt really in control. I just felt under control, even though I was only an hour ahead of the final cutoff. I knew what I was doing, and that's all thanks to you. Because of that DNF that I'd had on Manx Mountain Marathon, you were then able to help me to make everything go as well as it could possibly go. So that was really brilliant. And then the Lakeland 50, I applied exactly the same thing to it, and I felt absolutely fine until about 40 miles in, and then it was midnight and I felt a bit tired and my feet hurt a bit, because if I'd been going further, I probably would have sorted them out and done stuff to them. But because there was only like 10 miles to go, I just thought, oh, I'll just leave that grit in my shoe, or just only 10 miles to go, which was the right decision because I wanted to get a fast time. I'd aimed for 16 hours, didn't think I'd be even capable of getting that, and they ended up getting 14 hours 40, and that's with making a film, and you know, I wasn't like hanging out at the checkpoints or anything, but I wasn't going really fast. I was being held up by queues. I could have gone faster, probably would have been absolutely broken at the end, but you know, I was okay 2 days later, like walking around and stuff, which is handy for chasing after a toddler. So then I did the Sussex Stride 52 just at the end of last month, about 3 weeks ago now, and that was harder. I hadn't really trained in the same sort of meticulous way that I had for the previous two. I had to do this one to qualify for the 100 that I might do. So I sort of had to do it. And there was a few things on that one that definitely I'm going to sort of learn from and not do again. So I think that will come out in the next question.
So that leads us on to this one then, isn't it? So that's it. So it's getting you to look back at the positives. So we start off with, you know, what went well, you know, what did you feel like you really gained and learned and achieved over the past season? So even, you know, even if when things have gone wrong, and, you know, things have gone wrong for you in the past season, but we get you to focus that attention and that memory on the positives first of all. So then, yes, we then move on to the next one, which is, you know, were there any moments in that past season which were particularly challenging or frustrating for you? And then we can expand on that. And these expansion actually comes from my other coaching colleague in the team, Greg. These is his input into the development this season, which is, so what could you do differently to prevent them from happening again? And how could you cope with the situation differently if it happened again? The key thing is, what did you learn from it?
Yes.
So, yeah, what were the things that you found particularly challenging last season?
So, blisters on UTS. I had, I knew the shoes were going to be blisters, so I did actually have to stop 3 times to sort them out, which obviously cut into my time and made me closer to those cutoffs. So, the past sort of 18 months I've been on this quest to find the perfect shoe and in time for the Lakeland 50, which was scaring me. So I did actually find a really good shoe. I use the Saucony Exodus Ultra 2s now, and I didn't get a blister on Lakeland 50 and I was absolutely thrilled. Yeah. But then I wore different socks on the Sussex Stride 52 and I did get blisters, and that was very upsetting because a biggie for me in these events is my little toe on my right foot tends to creep underneath the rest of my toes and get trodden on and develop a whopping blister, like almost the size of the little toe, and it's just really painful, and it makes me feel really miserable, and if I get that blister, even I put tape on it really early on that race, but it still was being trodden on and it still hurt quite a lot. So it just makes me miserable, and I can keep going. I mean, I finished the race. I had that blister from about 15 miles and, you know, it was quite painful towards the end. So I do keep going, but it's sort of not...
So what you do differently? So obviously you realise... So what was the difference between Lakeland 50 and then the Sussex?
I wore different socks.
So you changed the socks.
Yeah, so the socks that I wore were those trotter socks that are supposed to let your big toe move independently. But what it actually did was squish all the other toes on the other side because it was quite a stiff sock. So hopefully I won't get a blister again.
If you find a sock that works for you.
Yeah, don't deviate.
Exactly. And I think you raise an interesting point there in that, you know, a lot of people blame the shoes for developing blisters, but often it's the combination of the foot, sock and shoe, and maybe even insole interface. And it's finding the right combination of all of those different things. You know, you said about taping your feet there. So, you know, you practice lots of different taping techniques going into UTS. You know, which ones of those worked, which ones of those didn't. And this kind of reflective activity that we're going through is for you to kind of actually really pause and think, well, hold on, which are the ones that really did work? So, okay, let's now fine-tune those versus just doing the same thing and expecting different results. You know, that is the classic quote of, you know, the definition of insanity, isn't it? Doing the same thing, expecting different results.
Yeah.
So for you who's been... challenged with blisters and things like that in the past, you know, a highly frustrating problem as a runner. It's about, right, trying lots of different things, which you've done. Identify something that does work. Great, nail that down. It's okay to try different things. So you tried another pair of socks.
Yeah.
You know, it could have, should have worked. It didn't. Okay, great. Note it. those ones aren't for you, go back to the ones that did work for you.
Yeah.
Fine tune that again. You know, those socks are great. Do you need different insoles to go with them? Because I know that's something else that you played around with. Do you need to try different lotions? You know, moisturizing lotions.
I've got some trench for next time. Yeah, I should have tried those socks on a long run, those trotter socks. But I tried them on one of my long runs, but not long enough because I think they gave me blisters at about 17 miles, and so I hadn't tried them on a long enough run that they gave me blisters on. So yeah, maybe don't try a new pair of socks on the race day. I knew that might happen, so I did pack my old socks, so I wore them for the rest of the race, but the damage had kind of already been done.
So
don't do that.
So it's really getting you to think about, okay, so of those challenges, you know, what did you learn from it? Don't use new socks. Make sure you tested them thoroughly in training, et cetera, et cetera. And if you did get those blisters happening in a race, is there anything you would do differently? So would you, if you had those other socks with you in your pack or in your drop bag, you know, can you access them earlier? Yeah. Can you check them earlier?
Yeah.
A really good quote, I think it actually comes from more sort of a mountaineering coach, which was, be bothered about the bothers.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So those things that are just bothering you. They're not really a problem yet, but they're just bothering you.
Yes. Yeah. Nikki Spinks has something like that. Nikki Spinks says, if you think about something three times, the next time you think about it, do it. Like if you're just, if that's niggling at you, just do it. And I think that's quite good as well. But that brings me on to another thing, which I would do differently next time, which was on that race, I was actually running with someone. She's my old teacher, and she's the one that got me into like the outdoor world and everything. And we were running together, but because she's 64 and I'm 40, she runs a lot slower than me, so where she makes up her time is being really efficient in checkpoints. So I was sort of being rushed out of the checkpoints, like, you know, I would have spent just a few more minutes there, sort of like eating a bit more, maybe going to the loo properly and like doing my feet properly, but I was sort of kind of rushed through there because I was trying to be with her. But then I was going slower than I wanted to on the actual run, so I was out for a lot longer than I would have been in that sense, and not able to sort of tend to my needs as much because I felt like I couldn't really stop. So I've decided that I don't usually run with anyone else anyway, but I've just decided that that's not for me, and that because I was worried that she said she could try and get me round this 100 miler, but I just don't think that our paces and our way of operating would really be compatible for that. And also in this 100 miler, she gets round by not sleeping at all, whereas I, you know, might want to take a 5-minute power nap or a 10-minute power nap or something in one of the checkpoints. And I just think, no, just go at my own pace and sort my socks out when I want to and just stop when I want to, and then I won't have, you know, I won't just keep going through a blister just because I think it's inconvenient for the other person to stop.
Yeah, it's hard to run with other people.
Yeah.
Because in a long race, an ultra race, you are going to have highs and you are going to have lows. And if you're running with somebody else, the chances of you both being on a high or you both being on a low at the same time is pretty slim. So it means that one of you is going to be going slower than the other, and the other person's therefore going to have to slow down, and then you'll swap round, and the other person who could be going a lot faster is having to wait for the other person who's now having a low point. So your overall pace will probably slow as a pair or as a group, as opposed to going as an individual. But of course, the flip side to that is the mental support you get from being with other people. Again, you know, the quote of, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with others. Or just to that effect. So, you know, if it is just a question of having an adventure with friends, then, yeah, running with others, being with others, waiting for each other, supporting each other, yeah, that can work really well.
Yeah. I think I found, my knees hurt more and my hips hurt more and my knees hurt more because I wasn't going at my running pace. I was going like really slowly, just like not jogging, even just like walking but bouncing. So that was difficult, I found. So I and towards the end, I had to just go at my own pace and then just keep stopping and waiting. And I don't think that's motivational for either party. Someone's just stopping and waiting for you. It's kind of annoying.
Absolutely. Your running mechanics does change when you go much slower than your performance pace.
Yeah.
So yes, you will load your knees and your hips more by doing that, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we got to move on to the next question then, which we've sort of touched on already, but which is the... How did your overall performance compare to your initial goals and expectations? So think about the goals that you set yourself at the end of 2022. Did we meet those goals?
I think it was definitely the right decision to do the 50 miles at the Lakeland 50 and not the 100 miles. I don't think I was ready for that. So that was definitely a good change to the goals. And then fulfilling the 50 milers and the 50Ks, I've done a lot better than I thought. I now feel fully confident in running 50 miles. Like, I've got the Arc of Attrition 50 coming up in January. And I'm having a month off now in October, just jogging around. And then I'll be back on the training November, December, and then... in January, because it's at the end of January. So I feel confident now that, you know, if you told me to run 50 miles tomorrow, I could, because that's what I sort of did with the Sussex Stride. I am really pleased about that. But it gets to about 40 miles and I kind of think to myself, or I get to the end of the 50 miler and I'm like, no, that's enough. I cannot ever do 100 miles. And that's kind of worrying, because about a week later, I then come back round to the idea of, yes, I do want to try to do 100 miles. And there is one from the Long Distance Walkers Association that I am now qualified from doing the Sussex Stride. I'm qualified to do that one now. And it's at the end of May. It's in the Cairngorms in Scotland. So it's not up the top of the mountains, but it's like through passes and stuff. And that's what I really like. I like a bit of a hilly one. You get 48 hours to do it, which is great, like for a first 100 miler. It's not waymarked at all, but I think what I'll do is get a better watch and I'll get that OS mapping app on my phone so that the navigation side of things doesn't slow me down. And I'll just go at my own pace and maybe sleep a bit. But yeah, I'm just scared, because at the end of 50 miles, I do think that's enough. And I just can't get my head around the fact that possibly I will have to make myself go further. And I know that it's probably something I can do because I'm a determined person, but I just don't want to be like really miserable and in pain doing it, because that's not what we're here to do in life, is it? I could probably just get it done and be like, oh, well, I did it, but I didn't really like it and I will never do another one. I kind of want to do it and enjoy it as much as possible, if that makes any sense.
It does. So again, I think you're starting to kind of jump ahead of yourself there in terms of the 100 mile and what that's going to entail. But what you just said there about enjoying it, then this feeds into my fourth question, which is, we reflect back over this last season, what aspects of your training and racing did you find most fulfilling and enjoyable?
Definitely the views on the Snowdon race, and I did love the steep climbs, actually. Like, it was hard work, but I just liked it. I liked the scrambling, and I loved seeing Wales from all those different angles. It was just a brilliant day out. I actually enjoyed that more than the Lakeland 50. The Lakeland 50, don't tell anyone that loves the Lakeland 50, because it's a bit of a cult, isn't it? but I found it a bit disappointing in terms of views, because I've seen the Lake District like from loads of different angles, and it can be really, really incredible. But I just found it a little bit too runnable in a way. I was like, oh, it's just a bit easy. Like, I just found it a bit easy, but obviously
it's
not.
More that it doesn't go over anything high. It's just the passes and low levels.
So
you need to understand, you know, what that is that you're entering
exactly
versus, you know, it's not a mountain race.
Yeah,
and that's the sort of key.
Yeah, so it wasn't quite as exciting as the Snowdonia one.
So if we kind of focus in on that, so you said, you know, what you really enjoyed was, you know, being in the mountains, the views, the terrain, you know, going somewhere maybe a bit different. So he's, you know the lakes very well, but Snowdonia, maybe that's not an area that you explored as much.
Yeah. So maybe it is. I have in the past, but not recently.
Yeah. So then what we then do is we take your answers to these questions, and then we think about, okay, so what does that inform us regarding your goal setting for next year? So if I slightly jump ahead of myself here, we say, right, well, what you really enjoyed was, you know, the views, getting up in the mountains, exploring certain areas. Well, okay, so then the Cairngorms challenge, that's going to meet some of the things that you enjoy, that you're going to get up into some high mountains. You're going to hopefully see some nice views if the weather's good.
Yeah.
Exactly. Fingers crossed. Who knows? But, you know, even so, you're going to have hopefully, you know, good views, good challenges. The steepness, you like the steep climbing. So maybe, again, that's where you maybe didn't enjoy Lakeland 50 as much as Snowdonia, because it is more runnable versus steep hiking, a little bit of hand on rock, scramble, that kind of stuff. So again, so I was thinking, right, though, that's the kind of thing I really enjoy.
Hiking, not yeah, running.
That's it. But again, that's your background, isn't it?
It's hiking.
So we're saying, right, well, let's find events, challenges, races, whatever, that fit that. So to go and say, right, let's go and enter 100 miles of the South Downs Way or 100 miles on the Grand Union Canal, that's not going to be your bag.
No.
So be motivated to do it. So this goes back to, you know, how do I choose my events? Well, then you start thinking, well, what are the things I actually enjoy? And it might be what are you good at as well. But is it, you've got to enjoy it.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah. And then we work from there. So, okay, look, before we sort of then think about that is, we go back to the goals that you didn't achieve and what contributed to that outcome of why you didn't achieve your goals. So if we go back to 2022 and the conversations back then, and you were saying, I want to run Lakeland 100, okay? So why didn't you run the Lakeland 100? And there's a couple of reasons for that, one of which was the fact you didn't actually have a qualifying event.
I wasn't allowed to. It wasn't my fault.
You know, it's like that was slightly out of your control. But even so, if we take that kind of...
Yeah. I don't know if I have time to, like, do the long run training part of it. I'm not sure what it entails. I mean, I'm not actually sure what training, what more training I should be doing for 100 over a 50. So I just feel like that's as much as I can give like right now. I suppose I could run all day on a Sunday. I do have all day on Sunday to do that. And I can do more strength training as well. But yeah, I'm not sure that I can train enough that it won't hurt. So I might just have to go into it being prepared to just suck it up and be a bit miserable for a time.
Yeah. So again, that's an important point to then consider when you are then setting your goals, is when we think about what that goal is and what's the requirements in terms of training volume and training intensity. So what I mean by that is, you know, can you actually get enough miles, time in the legs to prepare you for that challenge?
Oh, yeah. I remember now, I was just really exhausted, wasn't I? I was just really tired.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. Yeah.
So I was thinking about, you know, what can you do about that? Is there anything you could change regarding your time availability, your energy levels, in order to maybe squeeze a bit more into your calendar? And the other thing to think about for people is, you know, if you set yourself a target, particularly a time target, you know, let's say you want to run sub 3 hours for the marathon. Okay, so what does that look like in terms of running pace and intensity? So, you know, if you're wanting to run under 3 hours for the marathon, you're looking at something around about a 124, 125 half marathon. Okay, is that something you're capable of now? And if it's not, how are we going to, again, square that circle?
Yeah. So do you think I shouldn't run 100 miles in May? Do you think that...
We're not there yet. We need to think about, have you got the capacity? And is it also something that you really, really want? You know, what's the why behind that?
The why is because I'm writing my book about ultra running. And I feel like, personally, I don't want to run 100 miles. It's not really anything that I really want to do. But because so many people are doing them these days, I'm curious as to, you know, what happens on one of them. I kind of feel like in order to be a credible author, I should try at least to run 100 miles, even though I know it's not something that I particularly want to do, and I could live without doing it fine. I'm really happy with my 50 miles. I'm fine with that. But I kind of feel like if I've not done 100 miles, I don't know what to tell people in the book, even though you're helping me with the book and lots of other people who have run 100 miles are helping me with the book. So it will have the correct information in it. I just sort of feel like to be credible as an ultra running author, I ought to run 100 miles, but no more than that.
Why 100 miles and not a 86 miler like I did last month?
Yeah, or 86 miles.
Why not 160 miles of the Spine Challenger North? Why not a 200 miler?
I think 100 miler is the one where you experience those maybe two nights going through the nights, and it's just the one where it's just different, isn't it? It's a whole different kettle of fish to 50 milers. And so I might be missing something in the book by not personally having done one, even though you can obviously tell me if anything's missing.
I mean, the problem is with ultra marathons is every single one is different. Even if you're doing the same event year after year, every single one will be slightly different because of so many other variables in terms of, you know, weather conditions, for example.
Yeah.
So, and an ultra marathon is quite simply anything more than a marathon.
Yeah.
Usually starting at about 30 miles, 50K. So, you know, do you need to do a 100 miler to call yourself an ultra marathon runner? No. So, yeah, I mean, I totally get where you're coming from. Is that sort of wondering what it's really like and feeling like you can relate to your audience.
And can I do it? Like, can I even do it? Like, that does intrigue me, that. Like, but at the same time, but I think if it wasn't for the book, I wouldn't be planning it this coming year. I'd be going like one, the next step for me would be like doing this coming year would be more like doing a 70 miler sort of 70 to 80 miler sort of thing. So I'd do that for the whole of 2024. And then the year after I'd be thinking about 100 miler. That's how I would prefer to do it. But because the book will be coming out this time next year, I kind of think, oh God, I've got to fit it in. Steve says that I shouldn't have to, but I just feel like I should, but I don't really have the capacity to do it. Like, Finley still wakes up every single night. I'm waking up at 6:30 in the morning. I'm tired. Yeah. I've just taken on a new job with Summit Magazine.
So really, are you setting yourself up for just a rather unpleasant experience.
Yes, basically,
and potentially failure.
Yes. Well, hopefully not failure, because so I'd just crank it out. I'd crawl to the finish line. But I would probably be in a lot of pain. Like, after the Sussex Stride, I had a migraine for 2 days afterwards and felt really sick as well. It had been a really hot day.
I mean, we stand on the start line of ultramarathons, and one of the reasons we're there is we don't know if we're going to get to the finish line.
Yeah.
You know, that finish line is never guaranteed ever for anybody. Whether you're front of the pack, back of the pack, middle of the pack, there's no guarantees. You don't know if you're going to be there. And that's part of the reason why we do it, the challenge of the unknown. But I come back to this point where we've got to pick goals which are achievable. And if they are a goal which is not achievable, then you're setting yourself up for disappointment.
Yeah. Or a lot of learnings.
or loss of earnings, yeah.
Oh, no, a lot of learnings, not a lot of earnings.
Well, that's it. You go and fail miserably at the 100 miler. What's that going to do for your book sales?
It'll be brilliant, because I will know all the reasons why I failed. I don't know. At least I'd had a go.
Absolutely. And I mean, today's chat was supposed to be about learning from DNFs, actually. I think we're going to need to change the title when this goes out for listening later on. Reflection for goal setting. We can change the title. But anyway, I mean, we do learn more from DNFs than we do from successes. We learn more from our failures than we do from our successes, of course. But, you know, you're saying about how you feel the need to do the 100 miler, and I totally can relate to what you're talking about myself as a coach. However, you know, the longest, furthest that I've raced is 112 miles, but I've coached people for 200, 250 miles. I race single stage ultra marathons, but I have coached people for doing stage races. Which is a different beast again. So just because you haven't done it yourself doesn't mean that you can't advise and help people.
Yeah.
You know, I've worked with Olympic athletes and still have Olympic athletes on the books. I'm never going to be an Olympic athlete myself. Does that mean that I can't help people who are going to the Olympics? No. Because as long as you know, understand the theories and the principles, they apply regardless whether you've done it yourself or not.
Yeah.
Just because you've done something yourself doesn't mean that you can teach and help people do the same again. And in some ways it can narrow your viewpoint, because you think, well, I did it this way, so that must be the way to do it. And that's the problem with, you know, a lot of people getting into coaching is, you know, they've done things themselves, they've achieved great things themselves, but maybe haven't had the same challenges that others have had, and therefore can't relate. We see that across the board.
And even in my book, I've got a whole section on you don't always have to go further. Like, because everyone's like, oh, yeah, I'll do the 50, and then I'll do this one, and then I'll go longer, and then I'll go longer. It's like, you don't have to, and I'm not even taking the advice from my own book.
Exactly. You know, I know what I'm good at, which is very trail hiking type races.
Yeah.
Ideally, probably around about the 100-mile type distance. That's what I'm good at.
Yeah.
My first race coming up next season is a half marathon.
Ah.
The complete opposite. Not what I'm good at all. But I'm doing it because it's going to challenge me in a different way.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, the challenge is, can I get faster?
Yeah.
I can go longer and I can go slower. You know, the logical thing for me to do would be to do more things like the spine race and do, you know, Challenger North, do the full spine. And, you know, people are always asking me, you know, when are you doing the North? When are you doing the full, et cetera, et cetera? And it's like, well, not yet, because I know I can prepare and do something similar to that. Whether I could do it well, whether I can do it fast is a whole other matter. But, you know, training for that one, I can make that work. What's harder for me is to try and go shorter and faster.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a sweet spot in the middle.
There is.
Yeah.
So I'm not at all saying don't do the 100 miler. Mm. But again, you need to reflect on what's going to be achievable.
Yeah.
And what did you find difficult about the training for the 50 milers? You know, do you need to do significantly more volume? Not significantly more, but I think you need to get yourself to the position where doing week after week of 50 miles consistently, that's achievable. I can get 50 miles in a week, no problems.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit more than that. But if you think, my goodness, trying to get 50 miles in a week is going to be really hard to fit in with everything else, you're going to make life difficult for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You need to do big, long back-to-back runs? No. Classic example, Camille Herron just smashed the Spartathlon, but she's famous for never doing more than 3 hours in a training run.
Wow, yeah.
The details of Courtney DeWalter's training plan are a top secret, closely held secret. But we know that she doesn't do big, long runs in training most of the time. She does ventures every so often, but a lot of the time is double run days. You know, it's 5 miles in the morning and another few hours later on. Mm. And it's that, but it's that consistency. She's still getting, you know, 100 plus miles a week here, but it's multiple shorter runs a day, quality of quantity.
Yeah.
Is looking at your life, how can you build that in?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just tempting to just see what happens. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see what I can do. I do want to read out some nice live things, though, for you. Tadeusz says hello as well. Good luck with your medical treatment, Tadeusz. I know that's starting soon. Martin, who we answered the question of early on, he said, thanks, Tim. The 100K UTS is his A race in May. He's on his way to 100 miler as well, and that will be the other A race of the year. He'll build the rest around, of the year around those.
So. Yeah, yeah. I did the UTS 100K this year.
Yeah.
Last
yeah. That looked really hard. I don't know how anyone did more than 50 there.
I don't know how anybody did the 100 mile.
I know. It's mental. Especially in that heat. Like, that's one of the other things that concerns me about trying to do a 100 miler. That's why I've gone for Scotland in May, because I absolutely couldn't run a 100 miler in this weather now.
Well, it's all about just preparing for every eventuality.
Yeah, but I don't want it to be too hot. Maybe I should sign up to one in the Arctic, though. It would definitely be cold.
Maybe.
Yeah. So Christian Poulton says that he has entered the UTS 50K next year. So he's hoping to better his time on that. And he's hoping to build up to 100 miles eventually, but doesn't feel quite ready yet. However, mm-hmm. he does like to push himself to see what's possible. Sounds a bit like me as well. Raymond Smith says, Claire, I always find that it doesn't work running with someone else, as we all have our own pace, as you found. It's a case of being antisocial, I'm afraid, and saying, sorry, I just have to run my own race. Yes, I find that you do get running with lots of different people over the race, so you're not that antisocial if it's a big race. But yeah, if it's one of the smaller ones, you do tend to be on your own a little bit, which is fine. And Lloyd says, if you wait until you feel ready for your 100 miler, you'll never be ready, Christian. Multi-days are a good way to get fit for it. So do the Druids next month. That will help you immensely. I've done the Druids challenge a couple of times. It's a really, really nice race. Severin has an insight for me. She says, I think you could write about planning for a long ultra, but personally don't think you need to actually do it. And it doesn't sound like you want to do it much either. So, ... Lloyd says, Tim is right. It sounds like an awesome DNF chapter, though.
Yep.
And then Rain Mansmith has some advice on the Arc 50. As someone who's DNF'd the Arc 50, be prepared to go out hard for the first 28 miles to St Ives, which is the hardest stretch, but a tight cutoff. It's rock climbing from Cape Cornwall onwards. Oh, that sounds brilliant. I like the idea of some hands-on rock. Definitely. Okay, I'll go out hard for the first 28 miles. I'll properly prepare for the Arc. Yeah. Yeah. I also have to make a video as well, so I sort of have like even more to think about with all the like batteries and charging and making a film, which I actually really enjoy. But yeah. Yeah, I think if I wasn't
maybe
writing the book...
You need to hire a photographer to follow you, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. That just seems a little bit indulgent, though. we do have another couple of just patron questions, if you've got 5 minutes before we go, Tim. We've got there's one from Christian about the third half fueling, and there's the one from Tracy with the osteoarthritis. Which one would you like to do first?
Should we do the first one, fueling?
Fueling, yeah. Because I think Christian might be watching live, so that's good.
Yeah, I think you just said that. Yeah.
He said he has issues on fueling with the last third of an ultra. He has no appetite, but he knows that he needs to eat. The only food that he could stomach on his last one was mini pretzels and cold boiled small potatoes provided at the aid station, which were actually quite nice, and his stomach didn't object to them. So yeah, any advice around fueling in the last half of an ultra? My mouth gets really dry. I need like really slippery stuff at that point.
That's it. So for me, it usually is just going simpler and simpler as the race progresses. So maybe in the early phases there is a little bit more real food in there. You know, I use things like the Supernatural fuel pouches for some easily taken on board but more real food with a bit of fat and protein mixed in there, and gives you a little bit more of that satiety, just making you feel a bit fuller rather than just pure sugars. And going through an aid station, you know, I'll grab some fruit or some nuts and things like that. But then as the race progresses, it does just shift more and more to just simple sports fuel, you know, energy drink, simple gels, that kind of thing. So for me, you know, as I go towards the back end of a race, it's just going into energy drink and gel. So for example, you know, you're as a on the bottle here, you know, Precision Fuel and Hydration. So, you know, I use their electrolytes and their energy gels, but for that last race I did back in September, the Ridgeway, actually used the powder, so the drink powder. Just so that I wasn't wanting to take on extra gels as well, but I was drinking okay. So I was then switching to get my calories via my liquids as well, combining the two. It's just, you've got to get it down there. You just got to force it in there. If it is looking at more real food, if you really kind of reject that simple sugar, you know, high sugar content, for me, it's things like rice pudding, easily taken on board, you know, slips down quite nicely, but again a good hit of carbohydrate but with a little bit of fat and protein mixed in there. So that's quite a good one to take on board. You know, I know people that have just used pot noodles at aid stations because again, it just, as you said there, your mouth a bit dry, just slips down. Really what I get everyone to do is to test in training, and that's where some of those longer runs come in for testing things, or you know, your B and your C races are for testing things. And then we also talk about having a kind of three-stage plan as your sort of bullseye, nutrition bullseye, where you've got your primary nutrition that you're planning on taking to getting your calories on board. And then you've got your kind of out your middle ring as a next step out, which is your sort of your backup, your alternatives. You know those things work for you, but they're maybe just not your favourite flavours, or maybe they're your alternative backup flavours if you start getting a bit of taste fatigue. So again, think about the taste fatigue. For me, I like then switching to some quite sharp tastes. So things like lemons or limes, those kind of flavors, so either kind of gels with that flavoring in them, or the Precision Fuel and Hydration got those chews, so lemon and lime chews. So it's a bit like, what's the word I'm looking for?
Jelly babies?
Yeah, kind of, yeah, sort of
fruity
jelly
stuff.
Yeah.
Citrus?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's a citrus, but it's kind of, yeah, something you can kind of chew. I mean, for me, in that race, it was a very hot race. And again, starting to run a bit dehydrated, so didn't feel I could kind of chew them quite as easily. So I did them a couple of times. I was like, nah, let's just go back to gels. It's just easy to get down. Mm. That would be a usual thing for me. Or if I need to kind of freshen my mouth, I'll use something like a Fisherman's Friend, you know, very strong mint. That, again, can just... So sometimes that, you know, final third of a race, it tastes fatigue. You're just bored of what you've been having up until that point. So you need to just try and, you know, freshen your palate or try something of a different flavour to get it on board. I think that covers the point there, really, is trying those things in training, trying different flavours, different textures. And it might be just, again, as you shift into the latter phases, is you just keep it super simple. So, yes, you got your key targets, you got your outer ring, your middle ring, but then the outer ring would be just your absolute backups. So it might be you just go for your, you just said there, Jelly Babies, Haribo, you know, it's just super simple. You can just try and get it in your mouth, swallow, nothing really else involved. And that might be the way you get it down, or it might be going through the aid stations and it is just grabbing your watermelon, your orange, halves, quarters, whatever, your bananas. And maybe it's just going for that or your soup or something like that, just for something different.
I like the idea of drinking more of the calories as well. Like I always forget that side of it. So that sounds like something Christian might want to investigate.
That's it. I mean, a lot of the time, you try and separate hydration and fuel. So you get your liquids, your hydration, you can drink to thirst, and then you take your fuel on as per your fueling strategy. So, for example, if it is a very hot race, you might want to be drinking more, but if all your calories in there, then you end up actually taking on board too many calories, and that will obviously upset your stomach. Or the danger is if it's a very cold race and you're not then being sort of prompted to drink as much, then you don't actually take on enough calories. So generally it's quite good to separate your fuel and your hydration. But I do find that, you know, as you then move into those latter phases, sometimes it's easier just to combine.
Or at least have one water and one, like, fueling.
Which is generally positive, actually. And most of the way through a key race, so... You know, something where I am pushing the limits. I have one bottle of fuel and one bottle of water, and then I can just take in my fuel as per plan, sipping as required, and then maybe even picking up a third bottle of water at aid stations to have in between. So hopefully that answers that question.
Helps you, Christian.
Fuel for thought, anyway.
Definitely. And then the last question, just quickly, is just a question from Tracy Hampson. She said, is there anyone here with osteoarthritis? Because she's been having knee pain and swelling during and after running for over a year. So she's finally made an appointment with a doctor and got x-rays. And she's in the early stages with a slight loss of joint space. So she's still managing, she's managing running by cutting back on distance, time on feet, running slower, sticking to trails rather than tarmac. And she's just wondering if anybody else suffers and are they able to run, and like if there's any supplements or exercises she should be doing. She's also vegetarian, so she's looking at suitable glucosamine MSM supplements. Osteoarthritis does run in her family, so she's expected it at some point, but she's not. She's only 47, so she didn't expect it just so soon. So do you have any words of advice for Tracy?
So the best thing is make sure you're then getting seen and supported by a sports physio who can guide you through this. The key message I would get across is you are not your scan. So just because you've had an x-ray that shows some loss of joint space doesn't mean you have a problem. You know, we can x-ray, you know, everybody over the age of I should say she's 47. I don't want to get that wrong.
Yeah.
Everybody over the age of 30, 40, we are going to see loss of joint space. Mm-hmm. You x-ray my knees, you're going to see loss of joint space. You're going to see degeneration and things like that. I haven't got any knee pain. You can x-ray people and see horrendous changes on an x-ray, and they have no problems whatsoever. They're perfectly fine. And you can also x-ray people and see no problems whatsoever, but they have pain symptoms. So you are not your scan. Mm-hmm. And just because you've got pain and swelling now doesn't mean that you're going to continue to have pain and swelling. So there's something which is irritating your joint. That's not necessarily arthritic changes, all right? Arthritis is not wear and tear. So we used to kind of call it degenerative. I've used that word, degenerative, but because it's just so ingrained in our language. But it's not a, strictly speaking, a wear and tear problem.
Ah.
Running does not make arthritis worse. If anything, we've had multiple studies showing people with arthritis who run do better than those who don't.
Ah, brilliant.
So, you know, even if you have some arthritic changes in your knee, the best thing you can do is keep fit and healthy. Mm. And if that means going running, go running. Great. Brilliant. It might be way, might need to look at different ways of running, might be looking at slightly different running style. So particularly things like increasing your running cadence will reduce the impact force, the peak force going up through your legs and through your knees. So learning to run with a shorter stride, a little quicker with your cadence, at least 10% faster than your natural cadence will significantly reduce your knee loading forces and therefore any potential knee pain. It will load your ankles and your calf a little bit more, so you do need to build up more, build up slowly for that. Trying to change your running style to more of a midfoot landing rather than a heel strike will reduce the impact forces going through your knee. So it might be just looking at tweaking that a little bit. It might be looking at footwear and changing that and giving yourself the support there. Definitely about getting in the gym, getting strong and staying in the knee. So there's doing all those kind of things. But it shouldn't be a case of you need to stop. There are some genetic links, but it's not that if you've got a genetic family history that you are definitely going to get it. It just might be that you've got the blueprint for it, but then there's been something else which has triggered it. Mm-hmm. So again, what we're thinking about arthritis now, if that is the right diagnosis, because it may not even be the right diagnosis, there might be something else going on. But if it is arthritis, generally we're thinking this as more of an inflammatory problem due to lifestyle and diet are usually some of the biggest triggers for that. You mentioned there about being a vegetarian, is making sure you're getting enough things like sort of protein and good healthy fats on board to support that, which can be a bigger challenge in a vegetarian diet. Things like glucosamine and chondroitin, people do talk about using them. There is zero evidence to support it. So some of those early research studies that came out suggesting the use of glucosamine, they were subsequently rubbished. So it is not a recommended supplement. That said, some people do take it and they swear by it. Is that because it does work, or is that because it's a placebo? We can't really answer that one. We do know that placebos work even when you know it's a placebo. So if simply taking a tablet make your knees feel better, fine. Is it because of what's in the tablet or not? Who knows? So I can't sit here and say, oh yeah, those medications or those supplements or things like that work, because the evidence says they don't work. Uh-huh. But you will always find people that go, oh, but it worked for me. So either they're an outlier and it did work for them, or it's just a placebo and simply taking a placebo worked.
Yeah.
Which we know it does.
Yeah.
And the bigger the pill of that placebo, the more effective it is as well.
Wow. Anyway,
that's, another story.
Doesn't matter what colour it is, blue or red pill.
Oh, now I think it does, but I can't remember which. There you go, you put me on the spot.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to get a pharmacist on board, he'll be able to answer that question for you. But yeah, probably is a colour association to success as well.
Yeah, anyway. Maybe bright pink is the key pill. Yeah. Oh, well, thank you so much, Tim, for answering those questions for Christian and Tracy there. That was really, really kind of you. And thank you for talking me through my 100-miler dilemma as well. Yes, maybe next.
I'd say it's not that you can't do it at all, but you just got to have a good reason why, and you've got to be prepared for it.
Yeah.
So that kind of leads into maybe the next set of questions, which we'll have to wait for another day.
Yeah, next time. Yes, I think we're coming back on the 7th of November. I think we've got you booked in for at midday. And we were going to talk about winter base training. So, yeah, maybe that is a great time to talk about, you know, you've decided your goal for 2024 and now we're going to do some winter base training before, you know, maybe a May goal or a summer goal or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Brilliant. Okay, well.
We need to go back to the DNF thing. We never actually explored getting over a DNF.
Oh, yeah. I suppose we were more talking about the learnings from previous races, whether they would be DNFs or not DNFs, I suppose, weren't we? So we'll have to workshop that title.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, no, and change it because we didn't stick to... We didn't really stick to the five ways you can learn from a DNF in particular, kind of indirectly.
I was more sort of, reflecting on your season.
Yeah.
Learning from the past in terms of your season, which, yes, might involve a DNF. But we've been a bit more positive than that.
Yeah.
I'll maybe sort of put some stuff together because, I think certainly, DNFs hurt a lot mentally, emotionally.
Yeah.
But they can be incredibly powerful experiences in terms of growing.
Yeah. Well, we could always do that next time and then the following one do winter base training or do the winter base training and then have the following one as the DNF.
Whatever you want or whatever your listeners want.
Yeah. Okay.
Put it out there to the
audience. Yeah.
Put a poll up. What do you want Tim to talk about next?
Yes. What should we talk about next? Winter base training or how to pick yourself back up off the floor after a DNF.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well,
all right.
Yes. Well, if you are wanting some help with your goal setting and training next season, the coaching team at Team HP3 have a few slots currently available. I don't know. Are they still available? This was a while ago when you wrote that post.
Yeah, I've got a couple of slots left with the team. Yeah,
a couple of slots left. So get in touch for a free, no obligation chat, such as we've been having today. Tim, just quickly, how can we follow you? How can we book you?
Yeah, so Instagram is generally where I kind of exist in terms of social media. So Tim Piggott, HP3, if you do a search on there, or again, Claire's got various links to me. And the website is hp-3.co.uk.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, as Tim said, I've got links in the film description below and in the podcast show notes as well. So thank you so much, Tim. We will be back on Tuesday, the 7th of November at midday to chat either about winter-based training or DNFing and what we can learn from it. So thank you so much, Tim. Always fantastic to chat to you. And goodbye, everybody.
See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.